Attention all filmmakers. You have short films or full features without a distro. Come to www.fhffsd.org. That is the fantastic horror film festival. So hurry up, submit now. Do you need key art poster for your horror project? Do you have a limited budget and about to hit the festival circuit? Are you looking for distribution and need visual art to help the process? Well, you're in luck. Go to www.posterlabworks.com and contact them for more information. They'll work with your budget and provide you some great key art. If you mention Gruesome Herzog when you contact them, they will include art for matching postcards and along with the poster. Contact them now. Hello, everyone. This is Scott Guider. My very special co-host is Joanne Thomas, the co-founder of the Fantastic Horror Film Festival. And our special guest is a very dear friend of mine, a sweetheart. Her name is Caroline Williams. Caroline, how are you?
Oh, Scott, that's such a sweet and lovely introduction. If only you knew what I was wearing right now.
My headset just went funky there for a second. What'd you say again?
But I'm wearing my iPad and a giant cup of coffee.
And there you go.
Smile.
Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here.
She's going to start the show off with her very normal spunk. So, Joanne, take it
away.
Go
for it, Joe.
Well, hello, Caroline. How are you doing?
Hello, dear.
Since it's the holiday season, I have a question for you regarding bringing to life the Dr. Seuss classic. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. How much fun was that back when you did that?
Well, on the one hand, it was a great deal of fun because of the creative challenge of working on green screen, which I'd never done before. But the thing about green screen, it's sort of an empty, it's just a big green screen. And all I had to work with was my co-actor in my scenes and the director, who was on a remote from his station in a trailer, so he could see the action with the green screen overlay matting. And so I never got to really see Ron until he came out to say, hey, great day's work, thanks so much. So it was a very disembodied and strange thing, but it was such a unique and interesting challenge that I was eager to take it on. And because you have to invent the entire world of Whoville and the Grinch in your mind. And,
right,
you know, talking to the Grinch, looking at the Grinch, he's a laser point on various places on the stage. So everything had to be invented in your mind. And in my mind, and which is an enormously freeing, very wonderful experience because it's so childlike. And given the subject matter that it's Dr. Seuss and it's the world of children anyway, it was so delicious to tap into that and have that opportunity. It was a marvelous experience, challenging and unique and different.
You had a little children back in 2000. I'm assuming that your children were allowed to see it on set and have a good time with.
There was one particular day that was devoted strictly to bringing the boys. At the time, my older son, I think he was about 4 or 5, 4 years old. And my younger son was still so young that we just left him at home because these sets were so spectacular. Bo Welch was the art director and set design. And they were so fantastic, so beautifully sculpted, and so utterly unique for a little child to walk into this space. It was truly a marvelous, marvelous experience to see my son be inside the book, so to speak. And,
right,
of course, my children were raised with Dr. Seuss books. They're the primary book everywhere for the child. We had the entire library.
Sure.
And, to
nice.
See my son running and jumping and playing, and there was a slide structure inside, and all the other people who worked on the show were able to bring their children as well.
That's
so it
cool.
was like a bring your child
cool
to work
experience.
Day, and to see it through his eyes was so marvelous.
Now you could care less, right?
Well, now it's just feeding them. I mean, that's the challenge. they want to eat 24 hours a day. And I'm a good cook, and I cook a lot of food. But it is gone in a day. I made 2 dozen biscuits last night. 2 dozen. And they're big.
Oh, my God.
They're the size of your palm. And they're cream biscuits. So it's an especially fantastic biscuit that you've got to experience. And very simple to make. I made 2 dozen of those biscuits, and there's only 6 left. It's morning. I got to tell you, you can't keep them fed. You just can't. You know, 4 fish, 2 roast chickens, a side of beef, and that's breakfast.
A side of beef?
That's I mean, and milk. A gallon of milk a day.
Holy shit.
I buy a gallon of milk the night before. By the end of the day, there's maybe 1.5 inches of milk in the bottle.
Well, it's drinking healthy, I guess, huh?
I'm telling you, they're growing boys. My 18-year-old is 6'4", 230 pounds. My 15-year-old has just popped up to about 5'8 or 5'9". He's taller than me. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then add my husband, who's also 6'4.5".
Holy hell.
At about 200 pounds. I mean, it's a heavy, that's where my money goes. I'd love to be lolling around in diamonds and furs.
You are known, in the horror genre. Everybody remembers you, even still today, but Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 in 86 was one of these iconic films that they kind of took a different spin from the original to a more of a comedy. What was your experience like with Dennis Hopper? And even as of today, I'm sure people always come to you and say, ask you questions about Chainsaw Massacre 2, correct?
Oh, always, because it's the movie that I'm most identified with. It was a huge departure from the first film. Toby and Carson were the creators of it. So you had the original creative mind behind the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was a seminal film. It's in the Library of Congress. It's one of the top 100 films, according to AFI. It did change the look, the temperature, the feel, the storylines forever for horror films. And then Toby took his original film and literally turned it inside out, turned it into a parody and a satire, his own original first film, which was an incredibly gutsy move.
Right.
And he got to it before anybody else could, which was smart. And the fact that he managed to grab Dennis Hopper, Dennis had been, his career had been on a very sharp slide because of his drug use. His reputation for being a very uncertain player at best, and people literally felt like he had lost his mind because of his drug use. When I met him, he was nearly 2 years sober. Nothing could have been further from the truth. The man had experienced a creative rebirth that was a really inspiring thing to participate in and be a part of. He was grateful for that job. He wanted to work his way back into the good graces of the film industry. Before he came to us, he had done Blue Velvet, which was also edgy, experimental, out there, weird. All the adjectives that show business executives had for Blue Velvet and David Lynch, they also had for Toby Hooper and Chainsaw Massacre 2. Dennis was biting off big chunks of risk taking these roles, but he wanted to reestablish himself as an original creative actor.
Right.
You can't have the wealth of experience and the encyclopedic experience of working with so many incredible directors. George Stevens, Nick Ray, you know, the list goes on and on. He worked with so many foundational directors in show business.
Right.
You couldn't have gone through that experience and not have absorbed just impressive, creative, stylistic moments. And he definitely brought that
right
to the screen, as well as being an incredibly generous man. The thing, I learned so many basics and so many fundamentals of camera technique from him. And those are things that are important to know for an actor. Because when you know which side of your face photographs best.
Right.
When you know how to follow your light, follow your camera. When you know how a gesture or a look plays on camera, you know how to utilize those things.
Right.
To effectively tell the story, effectively and efficiently. And it gives directors more choices to cut to. And I learned those things from him.
You mentioned about Dennis Hopper, and a lot of people don't, you know, the only ones that know about Dennis Hopper are the ones that work with Dennis Hopper. And for you to be, to learn from him and for it to be so early in your career, it's pretty much a good stepping stone for your career, because as you said, as we said, you're known for that film, you know. Mm-hmm. We're going to move to 95. You go from Leatherface to a Leprechaun. Leprechaun 3 in 95. Now, a lot of people hate this movie. Of course, then again, a lot of people do hate sequels to begin with, but I've seen all of them. I'm a big Leprechaun fan. I think it's very creative. You know, Warwick Davis. Now, what was your experience like to be in a film like this, you know, knowing that you have a little small guy in a leprechaun uniform that's terrorizing people?
Well, what I learned about that little small guy was that he was a graduate of the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, and his very first film was for Ron Howard, Willow. Was considered a very impressive talent in England, and his reputation had only begun to grow in America. The ironic thing was, at the time we were working on my husband, who's a film marketing guy, was working on Apollo 13 for Ron Howard. So the Ron Howard experience was still very much a part of my world. I had read for that film and wasn't chosen for it. And, of course, my feelings were terribly hurt. Mm-hmm. And I felt like now I get to do Leprechaun 3. Oh, joy. While all my friends and my soon-to-be husband were all working on a prestige product like Apollo 13. The thing that was interesting about Warwick is his discipline, his endurance, because he's layered under piles and piles of what essentially is plastic, without complaining, giving full voice all of his lines while his face is just completely, you know, encased in latex.
Right.
The guy has an impressive level of physical endurance. It was an athletic event for him.
Yeah.
And one of the more interesting moments, there was a celebration of Ron Howard's birthday during production of Apollo 13. As a surprise, they had Warwick hide in the LEM, which was the tiny little capsule that carried the astronauts in the film. And as a surprise to Ron, they hid Warwick in that little thing and had him pop out like it was a cake. So there was a little bit of cross-pollination between the projects, which is what Warwick was, you know. Warwick was our link, in a way, to that project. One of the things that really stood out in my mind on Leprechaun, number one, was Brian Trenchard-Smith, an incredibly cultured, well-educated man who has a wonderful taste for the absurd and is revered by Quentin Tarantino as one of the seminal directors of Down Under, you know, noir and grindhouse films, which is an odd, you know, marriage between this very upper crusty British guy and grindhouse. But we were shooting at the Ambassador Hotel, which has been converted into something else, and significant portions of it were torn down. But we were shooting at the Ambassador, which is, of course, where Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And
right.
We went to the kitchen. X literally marked the spot. Someone carved an X into the floor of the kitchen where his head lay. So it was a very strange experience to ride the elevators up to the upper floors, and the elevator doors open. The light is on inside the elevator, but all else is utter blackness. It's just, and that was incredibly scary to be in that hotel. It was a mysterious, strange, but I had a terrific time on the film and got to work a little comedy into a horror movie, and that's always terrific because those are important moments. Mm-hmm. In horror, it can't be just scare, 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 scare. You got to have a moment to breathe and relax. You stole me gold. Exactly.
Now you got yourself involved in a new spinoff of Mikey Myers. Now Rob Zombie has a lot of fans because of his music, and that leads to fans of his films. You were in a film, Halloween 2. 2009, you played Dr. Maple. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
Now, you went from a ultimate classic from 86, Chainsaw Massacre 2, then you went to a little guy named Leprechaun who, you steal me gold, and now you've gone
yes.
to the new version of Mikey Myers, 8'5", no, not that tall, but
quite.
But you went to a new spinoff of Halloween 2. Now, this is in 2009. Now, what was your experience like from going from the 80s to 90s? Now in 2009, it's pretty much of a rebirth for you as far as the horror genre again. What was it like to work for Rob Zombie and to be in a film like this that you know it's going to be either criticized or loved?
Well, the thing about Rob that is great is he is a polarizing figure. And part of it is because he doesn't care what other people
right.
think, which is immediately gets people's hackles up. And he refuses to conform to any previously established rules. And that was certainly true of the Halloween franchise. He showed respect for it by staying true to the storyline. But he did want to tell his own story as he saw it. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting about his approach is that he approached Haddonfield like the town like Bedford Falls from It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
When we first meet Haddonfield in Rob's version, it's a lovely, beautiful town with lovely, beautiful people where evil is introduced. And then by the time you get to the sequel, it has become Pottersville. It has succumbed to the evil, and it's dominated by it. Such a bleak, dark landscape that he chose for that film, which is one of the things that made it attractive, because it provided a wonderful story continuity and a wonderful world for the characters to inhabit. I had been sort of, you know, career-wise from, I would say, 98 to 2006, I'd been busy with marriage and family life and raising kids and things like that. And while I had kept my hand in the business and I was doing projects on and off, I hadn't done a horror film in a long time. I hadn't worked very much in a long time. And I'd acquired new management and stuff who had said, this is a perfect project for you to splash back out in the business, and I said, great, let's do it. And my job was first shot, first day. Literally, the film kicked off with my stuff. So I was nervous, and I wanted to get it really right, because the way the first day runs kind of sets the pace of the tempo. When you have a good first day, it just gives good karma, you know, to the production. And that was important to me. One of the ironic things is Rob frequently used as his DP a guy named BJ McDonald, and BJ was shooting that day, shot all my footage that day, and it was just a terrific experience. I got to work opposite Octavia Spencer, Oscar winner for Val, as my scene partner. She was quick, smart, funny, nice. We had a terrific time. Basically, we got to write our own scene. Rob sent us into a room with a videographer, and he said, make up a conversation, something fun and you know, the way people talk at work, and it sets things up for Octavia to get killed. And that's what we did. We just started talking and had a great time, and Rob basically looked at the video and said, okay, start with this line, end with this line, give me a minute, and make it a minute long, and you're good. And that was it. And we provided all the pre-coverage and all that kind of stuff. It was just a great time. He's a very cool guy. I've never met anybody like that before. You know, it can be intimidating a little bit. You know, he's very much his own guy. He is not at all worried about what other people are going to think. He doesn't see the work day as, you know, he wants to get his shots. He wants to accomplish the work. He is so cooled out and calm and easy. It was wonderful.
It's a great experience for you, as far as you mentioned about getting back into it again, and that is a good stepping stone, you know, to dip yourself back into the business again. You worked, this next film, you worked with a good friend of mine. He's basically my best friend, Andrew Roth. He ran Abolition 2011.
Yeah.
I saw this way long ago, and I like Abolition, and then that's when I first, well, seen you in a character besides Halloween 2 as far as recently. What was your experience like working for Mike Clausen?
Mike is one of those directors who needs bigger budgets, because he, story-wise, he thinks big. And he has a lot of subtext to his stories that require time for exposition and story. And he's the kind of guy that hopefully will attract gutsier investors, because he's the kind of guy whose ideas deserve a little more money and a little more time. I greatly enjoyed shooting in Canada. Loved the crew, cast. Loved meeting Andrew. He's a man with his earnestness. He wears his sleeve, which can be tough. It can be that can be challenging to an artist. He's a lovely, lovely man. We had so much more in common than you would think on the surface. And he brought such reality to our scenes. He's knowledgeable as well. And that's good, because you don't want, particularly with younger actors who have yet to develop any kind of technique, who don't know much about production, who just want to get their emotions out there, you know?
Yeah.
That can make the work day very long and very challenging. I just felt like I had a lovely chemistry with Andrew. And I felt like our dynamic as mother and son was grounded in a real sense of reality. You know, there are certain experiences I've had in my life that have informed my life going forward that Andrew has only begun to experience. It gave me a lot of insight into his character and his personality, and I think it gave him a sense of groundedness in me as an authority figure of sorts.
Right.
Somebody who has literally, both in the story of abolition and in my own life, who's been marked by experience and carries that experience going forward.
Yeah.
And I think Andrew understood that well. And that's the foundation of our friendship today. We're still in touch with each other, and he has embarked on a whole new journey in his own life.
Yep.
That I pray he finds fulfilling and stays on, because it can be a rocky road, but it's a good road. So, and many of us have gone there before. So,
yep.
You know, keeping fingers crossed for Andrew.
Yeah, me and my wife are in his corner. We've been supporting him for. He's a phenomenal actor. I actually worked with him. I made my debut in 2012 in a film called Dakota. That's my first experience, you know, and a good friend. So. I love him to death, you know, and
it's that quality of friendship that anybody needs in life. But given the vagaries of show business and the difficulties that a creative life involves,
yep.
Having a constancy of friendship like that is really, really important.
Yep. Let's talk about a film that is also a third version, Hatchet 3, in 2013.
My great gift.
Yes.
From the wonderful Adam Green. Strangely enough, I was doing a fan signing for a charity February 2 years ago, and I was sitting next to a lovely woman named Rylea Vanderbilt, and we were chatting, and she said, I said, "What does your husband do?" She said, "Oh, he's a filmmaker." And I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And she said, "Oh, no, he works. His name's Adam Green." And I said, "You mean the same Adam Green who never hires me?" And within a month, I had the call, "Would you be interested in playing the role of Amanda Perlman in Hatchet 3? And Adam sent me the script, and, you know, he's such a vivid writer. He's very like L.M. Kit Carson. He's got a gift for dialogue. He's got a gift for the way people talk that's fun and interesting and great. And he sent the script to me, and I was recovering from shoulder surgery. I'd had some arthroscopic surgery in my shoulder, and I was only... You know, it had only been a couple of days to surgery, and I was so excited to read this script and to get this script that I leapt up, and this is what I do when I get a good script. I walk around the house saying the lines. I walk around the house playing the role. And that's what I did. I saw it. I got so excited. It had the same personality to me as Chainsaw 2, and it had such delicious humor. It brought back beloved characters. It had action. It was fantastic. And then I found out VJ McDonald was going to be shooting it, who was so impressive on Halloween 2. And that pretty much, that just totally clinched the whole deal for me.
Wow.
You know, then I and had a terrific time shooting. We were on location. We were in the swamp. VJ lit the swamp as though it were an interior studio. They were interior studio shots. It looked gorgeous. just the look, feel of the film, the humor of the film. It was just a phenomenal experience, and it really relaunched my career entirely. I'll never forget going to the screening at the Egyptian. I had a guy, Steve from Dead Central, had said, "I've already seen a screener." He said, "You're going to walk out of this theater, you're going to float out on a cloud when you see this film." And I did. It was just an amazing and wonderful experience. It was so rewarding.
You were phenomenal in there. I loved your character in there.
Well, I have to tell you, I felt like all the characters were so vivid. Even Danielle found three dimensions of her character. And to be able to work opposite somebody who's as strong and well-defined in her role as Danielle was incredibly satisfying, because she is a very smart, quick, very tough gal. Fully professional. I had reams and reams and reams of dialogue, and she only had the occasional, you know, punctuation point. And I never got a clean take all the way through. There were little stops and stutters along the way, but for the most part, it certainly worked out very, very fine. And it's a very satisfying film. Hatchet Army loves the movie, and I have to say, I was very happy with the quality of it. I look forward to a day, hopefully, that I'll be able to play opposite Tane for more than one shot, where he'll actually be able to talk to me. Because what has gone unexplored with him is he is one of the funniest guys around. And he has got such a sharp sense of humor, and he's such a sweet guy, and a very gentle soul for playing the brutal characters he plays.
Yeah.
I look forward to the day when I'll actually get to play an actual scene with them. That would be phenomenal.
Right. Well, actually, I like Hatchet 3 better than 1 and 2, believe it or not.
A lot of people have said that. But the beauty is Adam has talked about the possibility of linking the three films together as one epic Hatchet narrative.
Oh, wow.
As one long story, which I think would be so fun.
It would be. That'd be interesting.
I think the fans would love it.
Well, then
I'm sure they would.
The next film I just saw maybe 2 weeks ago. It's called Contracted in 2013, directed by Eric Englund, and you played a mother of a young lesbian who gets drugged and raped. And to see your performance as a mom, obviously you are a mom, so you kind of use that experience in the role as a mom, an overbearing mom, a concerned mom, a sometimes judgmental mom, because you're not really understanding what's going on with her. But give your experiences working for Eric Englund and your experiences in this film.
Eric is just an amazing young filmmaker. He really has a wonderful gift. He just has a natural gift for film direction. The story itself, I felt like, on the one hand, it's very linear, and it's sort of what you would expect. But it's filled with so many unexpected character developments and the way the scenes unfold. You know, he took a lot of risks by labeling day one, day two, day three, and he felt confident enough to do that, and that's what I like about him. He's a very confident young filmmaker. Stylistically, the way he composes his shots, the way things are edited, the style of music that he enjoys, as definitive as the music is. The photography, Mike Tesson's photography, is incredibly beautiful, which is a wonderful juxtaposition between images of wonder, of incredible beauty, with phenomenal violence and horror. That's a wonderful new development, I think, that horror filmmakers are beginning to explore. It doesn't have to be 16 millimeter cartoon splashy colors, gritty, blood and guts all the time. You can actually come up with a much more romantic storyline in some ways to tell your story and still have all those horror elements come to life. So that was one of the more interesting things as well. As far as the role, you know, the mom has her secrets too, and those aren't exposed until later in the story.
Right.
And it's a mother-daughter tale, but it's also people struggling with their own addictions and
issues
and degradations and difficulties,
right,
and the power struggle that ensues from that. you know, whether you're a parent living with a child or a friend living with somebody who's struggling through something that you've also struggled through.
Right.
And there's a lot of psychology behind that.
Right.
And it makes Samantha's story even more tenuous and more of a tightrope to walk.
What an ending.
The thing that was great about the ending is he doesn't show you the ending. And
right.
That was, once again, another choice that few filmmakers would be willing to take that risk. Very few. Because the payoff at the end is what a lot of people live for in horror. And he didn't feel like he had to do it.
Right.
And that was a very Rob Zombie-like, I'm going to do what I want to do. Come with me, see if you can keep up. So he's on his way. He's got his next film lined up, and he's just a young man of extraordinary gifts. And the young star of the film, Najar Townsend, as well as Katie Stiegman, as well as Alice McDonald, Charlie Koontz,
Matt Mercer,
who is sort of the new Justin Long before Justin Long decided to start lifting weights all the time and stopped being Justin Long. You know, Matt Mercer has this wonderful, romantic, tender heart in the film, and you've got to have something like that that gives it a little more emotional weight. All around, just a terrific little film. And I was so pleased and so happy to be a part of it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make creative and artistic choices and character choices and quality choices.
Right.
Instead of going from, okay, anybody who'll pay me anything, I'll show up. I'm trying to avoid that trap, because you end up leaving behind a long, long trail of sometimes a very poor quality projects that don't enhance anybody's reputation.
Right. All right, well, we'll go to the next one. I've heard about it, obviously, not seen it, but Tales of Poe, directed by Bart Mastronardi and Alan Rowe Kelly.
Yes. Alan is somebody that I met at a convention. The second we met each other, we knew we would be friends forever. He is a Renaissance man. It doesn't hurt that he's exquisitely coiffed and dressed, but he's one of those guys who can do everything. Literally everything. He hand set costume for this wonderful little story called Beans that interweaves the tales of Poe together. It's just sort of a unifying story that brings tales of Poe into a cohesive whole. And it's written by Michael Verratti, and it's a silent film, which is also very unusual in the horror genre. Bart is just an incredibly well-educated, very cultured young man. There goes those words again. Who is also a very gutsy filmmaker. He's also a DP. And he understands the essential nature of movies is the image. Is the moving image, is what you see on the screen. And he managed to bring together me, Amy Steele, and Adrienne King, because all three of us had seen Vindication and were just knocked out by it. By the story, by the characterizations, and by the risks that he took in that film. One of the things that impressed me the most about Vindication is he's got a rock shot of a phenomenal actor named Jerry Murdock, who is browbeating his son. He's brutalizing him verbally. The camera never moves and the actor never moves, but his voice and his eyes are burning with passion. And it's one of those scenes that just nails you to your seat. And I remembered watching it and going, I want to work with this guy. And I contacted him.
Yeah.
I sought him out and said to him, you are a man of extravagant gifts. I want to work for you. And then it took a while, but it's now managed to come together. And for next June, I think it's going to be a very powerful release. But once again, the production quality, we ran around stealing shots. We didn't have shooting permits, but we shot at some of the most exotic and beautiful locations that you will ever see in a very low-budget film. And like Contracted, and like some of the other films that I've appeared in, this film has virtually no budget, and yet the taste of the filmmaker is evident throughout, because every story within Tales of Poe, Cask of Amontillado and The Telltale Heart, he managed to find shooting locations, and they managed to create sets and atmosphere that I haven't seen in another low budget film. Just a phenomenal level of taste and artistry that add so much to those films. It's just going to be a visual treat and a storytelling treat. And I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see it. Really am.
Yeah, it's amazing. Bart's on his way.
Yeah.
He is on his way.
Well, you worked in a film, Seed 2, The New Breed.
Right.
Marcel Walls. I didn't mention this to you, but I'm good friends with Matt Mercer and Natalie Sheets from the film Madison County, which is Eric England's first film. So I've talked to all these. Yep. And Krista Campbell is another amazing actress along with yourself. And of course, Nick Principe played the killer in Madison County. So your experience, now Seed 2 looks like a film that's really going to put Caroline Williams back into this new age of films. You played the mother of a family of killers. Am I correct?
I am the mother of a family of killers. It introduces my character in Seed 2, which sets up Seed 3, which hopefully will start shooting in the summer.
Nice.
Marcel is a protege of Uwe Boll. And people love to dismiss Uwe as just a guy who blows up Dolph Lundgren. In truth, he's a fabulous storyteller, and he's moving in different directions as well. Far more psychological, subversive directions than people would expect from him. I did a short film as part of the anthology film series called The Profane Exhibition. I did a short film with Tara Cardinal and Clint Howard called Basement.
Okay.
And it is such a departure from what Uwe does. It's going to make news simply because it does that. But Marcel has long worked with and been a devotee of Uwe's, and when Uwe wanted to pass the football off to the seed, he chose Marcel. He couldn't have chosen better. So he's incredibly enthusiastic, very colorful. Loves the story, the character, and the love characters is very evident. It's just about in twisted road. And like I said, C2 is the launching pad for C3, which hopefully will begin shooting in the summer. Another, Krista Campbell has a whole new career for herself as a film producer. And she's one of the more clearly intelligent, ambitious, and very mature talents out there. She's one of those girls that can do anything. And she took some heavy fire, she and Lottie Grobman, for the Chainsaw 3D interview that they did when they were simply talking about their experience being producers on that film. You know, nobody expected Chainsaw 3 to have the incredible success that it had.
Right.
And subsequently, nobody really wanted to share it in the credit of that, but she was instrumental in making sure that film got off the ground. And I think she is very pretty. And because she's been the pretty girl in so many films, people wanted to dismiss her as just some girl who made some opportune connections. She did make opportune connections, but she did it because she was smart and she knew how to do the job.
Right.
And she is proving that going forward with Hotel's new film, The Kink, that Ryan Singer was so important in getting going. And I got to read for that film, got to read for a couple of roles of the film. And she's an exciting new producer. She's going to be doing amazing things in the future. Not just acting, but Seed 2 is a manifest. Seed 3, I believe, is probably going to be even better.
Okay.
To the truth.
Hmm.
Yeah. Marcel has incredible ideas. He loves retail experience. And like I said, he has an incredible passion for the characters and knows them well.
Right.
So the audience is in for a really big treat with Seed 2.
I like Seed 1. That was wicked.
It's very grindhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It's very grindhouse. Yeah.
Sweet.
This C2 is going to bring it brings a much rounder sophistication to the film, and who knows what he has in store for C3, but I know it's going to be good because he's that kind of filmmaker. He's very exciting. I think it's going to be fun.
Now, is there anything else that you have going on that you're allowed to talk about that's not listed?
I don't think so. I have recently hooked up with a new manager, Matt Jassen. He is just an absolute workhorse of a guy. He is a powerhouse of ideas and connections.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of people that he's going to be introducing me to in the next few months. So we're going to be rounding out my management agency thing. to really push forward and bring me more fully into 2014. I'm looking forward to a lot of really good projects. We've been approached on a great many things.
Good.
We're in the luxurious position right now of having some choices, and we're going to choose the stories and the directors that are going to be best for me. I'm just feeling very, very creatively juiced. I just feel very ready to some exciting new characterizations. I want to move more into evil characters and bad girl characters, bad guy characters.
Right.
And I want to play the power a little more. Things that would be more traditionally male characters, sheriffs and detectives and doctors and psychologists and things like that, and researchers, I'd like to play those roles. I think that's something that I can pull off at my age. And so I'm looking forward to that as well. We've got a lot in store for 2014. It's going to be a very, very exciting year. So I look forward to doing this again.
Just one thing, for the record, I would rather listen to you talk than me talk.
I talk a lot.
Well, the thing is, your stories and your information is very powerful, and it's really great to hear. But rumor has it that you might be coming to the Fantastic Horror Film Festival in San Diego next October. And well, we would like to have you. And I know that Matt may have said something about it to you, but we're looking forward to seeing as many celebrities there as we can possibly get. And we, like I said, we would really love that you would come.
Well, listen, if I'm not in front of the camera, I hope to be in San Diego. I love that town. And I've heard wonderful things about the film festival. And if I can be there, I fully intend to be.
That's great.
The website is www.fhffsd.org for all the listeners. Filmmakers, if you got films that you want to submit at a distro deal, or there's a catchy situation too we can work out, but definitely feel free to submit your film. Caroline, it was great having you on.
Thank you.
You are phenomenal. We love you to death, and so definitely we'll talk again.
I'm looking forward to it. Cheers to a very Merry Christmas and a very prosperous and busy 2014.
Same to you, Caroline. Thank you.
Definitely.
You bet. Have a great one. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye.